Hello, I'm Crypto Casey. In this podcast, we are going to talk about Ethereum. Many people associate Ethereum with Bitcoin, and some people use the words Ethereum, Bitcoin, and blockchain interchangeably. By the end of this episode, you will know the key differences between Ethereum and Bitcoin and their relationship with blockchain technology. Specifically, we will discuss what Ethereum is, what Ether is, how they work, and what the future holds for this blockchain project. I've divided this guide about Ethereum into 7 chapters to make it simple to follow and easy to understand. And stick around until the end of this podcast for an interesting bit of information that most beginners aren't aware of that makes Ethereum an exciting project to follow. Before we get started, make sure you check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/CryptoCasey for video versions of these podcasts. Please note that the best way to contact me is by visiting my website, CryptoCasey.com/help, to fill out a contact request form, or you can email me directly at Casey@CryptoCasey.com. Also, I conduct a weekly AMA, or Ask Me Anything, every Wednesday on Instagram at Instagram.com/CryptoCasey. So please use the link to my Instagram account listed in the description area to follow me and ask me anything you want every Wednesday. Awesome. Now that we've got that covered, let's learn about Ethereum. Chapter 1. What is Ethereum? Vitalik Buterin is a Russian-Canadian programmer and cryptocurrency researcher who came up with the idea for Ethereum in 2013, which finally went live in 2015. The most plain and simple explanation of Ethereum can be broken down into 2 words: software, platform. Now, what makes Ethereum different from other software platforms is that it is a blockchain-based software platform. So, what is blockchain? The most plain and simple explanation of blockchain is that it's records of data stored on a network of computers. And there are 3 pillars of blockchain that make it unique. 1. Decentralization. 2. Transparency. And 3. Immutability. So let's break down these 3 pillars. Pillar 1. Decentralization. The word decentralization with regard to blockchain is twofold. 1. It means that the data is recorded and stored on multiple devices in multiple locations around the world as opposed to one central place. And 2. Decentralization also means that no one person, company, government, authority, or entity controls the data record and storage process. So instead of traditional centralized entities like the IRS, JP Morgan, or MIT recording, storing, managing, and controlling their data by following their own protocols, deciding which servers to use, where these servers are located, and using their own proprietary software and security systems to protect their data, blockchain allows for decentralized record keeping, where data is recorded, stored, and managed on a network of computers with open source software all around the world. Any changes to the blockchain protocol go through a consensus process that no one person or entity has control over. So that is the essence of the decentralization pillar. Pillar 2, transparency. The word transparency with regard to blockchain relates to the way in which transactions are recorded on a ledger that is available for everyone to see and that is saved on a network of computers around the world, making the data impossible to change or alter. The best way to see the value of transparency in data recording, storage, and management is by comparing these 2 scenarios. Scenario 1. Currently, common citizens of the United States are not privy to where and how every tax dollar is spent by the United States government. We just have to take the government's word for it. And even if the government had to show their records, it would be very easy for them to create, forge, or manipulate any data they chose to share with us since they control their own data. You can see how that scenario is not transparent and not exactly trustworthy. So let's imagine if everyone in the United States had the ability to see a live, running ledger of where every single tax dollar was spent by the US government at any moment in time. Basically, all US citizens could see a full disclosure of how our government is managing our money. And in this scenario, there is more trust and transparency, the second pillar of blockchain technology. Pillar number three, immutability. Immutability simply means that the data recorded and stored on the blockchain cannot be changed, forged, or altered. And this is achieved through cryptography and blockchain hashing processes. If you would like to listen to a more in-depth podcast explaining what blockchain is and why it was developed, please check out my Blockchain Guide podcast episode. So to summarize the three pillars of blockchain technology, blockchain's recording and storage protocols make it such that once new data is verified, it is unmodifiable, it's distributed across a vast network of computers around the world, so it's hard to destroy, and no one person or entity controls the data or network, creating a transparent environment. Cool. Now that you are familiar with some of blockchain's important features, let's talk about the role blockchain plays in Bitcoin and Ethereum. Bitcoin and Ethereum are both use cases of blockchain technology with different purposes. Bitcoin is simply a digital currency that people can use as a form of payment to send to and from each other or hold as a store of value. While Ethereum is basically a programmable blockchain that people can build software on to create valuable products and services or just for fun. And due to the decentralized properties of blockchain technology, the software people can build on Ethereum are called decentralized applications, or dApps for short. And the nature and potential of these decentralized applications, or dApps, has inspired the idea of and desire for a crusade towards decentralized finance, or DeFi for short. The DeFi movement aims to transform the current financial system into a more transparent and trustworthy system, like I described in the scenario we discussed in the Transparency Blockchain Pillar segment. So how is Ethereum's blockchain-based software application able to operate if it's not owned or controlled by a central entity or authority? The answer to this question leads us to Chapter 2. Chapter 2, what is Ether? Many people commonly use the words Ether and Ethereum interchangeably when they actually represent two different things. Ether is the Ethereum blockchain's native cryptocurrency. It operates similarly to Bitcoin in that it's a digital currency that can be transferred to people around the world, used as a form of payment, or act as a store of value. However, Ether was created for an entirely different purpose. So why does Ether exist? In previous podcasts, I explained the similarities between Bitcoin and gold. So if Bitcoin is digital gold, Ether could be described as digital oil. Ether was designed with the intention of fueling the Ethereum network. Going back to the decentralized pillar of blockchain technology, we discussed how open source software is distributed across a vast network of computers all around the world. To incentivize people to host and maintain the data on the blockchain, Ether was created as a form of payment to fuel the Ethereum network. So anyone who wants to build a software application on the Ethereum network has to pay for the computing power and space required using Ether. And the amount of Ether required for network fees is determined by a built-in pricing system known as GAS, or G-A-S. Two other key differences between Bitcoin and Ether is that Bitcoin has a fixed supply and halving events, H-A-L-V-I-N-G. While Ether currently does not. A fixed supply and halving events protect cryptocurrencies from inflation, and a cap on the supply of Ether may or may not be implemented in the future. We shall see what the future holds. If you would like more information about Bitcoin halving, you can check out my podcast about the Bitcoin halving event in 2020. Nice. Next, let's talk about how Ethereum network fees are calculated. Chapter 3. What is GAS? GAS considers the bandwidth and space requirements, as well as the computational difficulty of each transaction to calculate the amount of fees it will take to complete. The term GAS was created to differentiate the cost of performing transactions on the Ethereum network from the actual value of the Ether currency. So, when executing transactions on Ethereum, you will see gas prices denoted in GWEI, or G-W-E-I, which stands for Gigaway. Gigaway, which is also referred to as nano ether or just nano, simply represents a fraction of ether to the 9th power. You can think about gigaways to ether as pennies to the US dollar. Similar to how the US dollar has quarters, dimes, nickels, and pennies that represent fractions of one US dollar, ether has multiple denominations of fractional values, the smallest denomination being wei, or wei. If you look at a chart showing all of the different denominations of ether, you can see 1 gigawei of ether is depicted as a decimal point followed by 8 zeros and a 1 in the 9th place. You can see how it would be difficult to determine the amount of ether transactions will cost with all of the decimal places. So instead of the gas price for a transaction being, let's say, 0.00000003 ether, you can simply say 3 gigaway. And since the most common unit of ether reflected in gas prices is gigaway, that's what denomination of ether is used to represent gas prices. So when initiating a transaction on the Ethereum network, you will see what's called a gas limit. In this field, you can choose to increase or decrease the amount of ether you are willing to spend to complete the transaction. The more gas, the faster the transaction will be processed. And if there is not enough ether to complete the transaction you desire, you will receive an insufficient funds for gas notification or similar. Currently, network processes on Ethereum are completed by miners via a proof-of-work protocol, which involves performing computational work on computer hardware to complete transactions. And miners, which are actually called nodes, are simply computers with software installed that connects them to the Ethereum network. Then, using computing power, they process and validate transactions in exchange for Ether. So using the built-in gas system, miners, or nodes, are able to set minimum amounts of gas prices they are willing to accept to process transactions. And if you don't have enough ether to cover the gas cost, then no miners will perform the computational work required to complete the transaction. Great, now when you use Ethereum, you will understand the difference between ether and gas, as well as the reason gas prices are denoted in gigaway. And now that we have a basic concept of what Ethereum is and the roles ether and gas play in the network, let's get into more detail about how the Ethereum software platform works. Chapter 4, How the Ethereum Network Works. Let's break down the Ethereum network into three simple layers so that we can understand how it works in a nutshell conceptually. Imagine the base layer of Ethereum consists of a vast network of computers called nodes. These nodes are connected to the internet with software installed on them that runs the Ethereum blockchain. And this base layer of nodes is where transaction data is processed, validated, broadcasted, and stored. And as these nodes perform the computational work required to process transaction data, they are rewarded with Ether, dictated by the gas prices we discussed earlier. These rewards incentivize nodes to maintain the Ethereum network by processing transaction data. Transaction data can contain value in the form of Ether, and information in the form of code. And these codes can transmit data and trigger actions in the next layer of the Ethereum network. So imagine another layer on top of the base hardware layer is a software layer. This software layer supports a programming language library that consists of languages like Solidity, Viper, Bamboo, and more. Using these computer languages, developers can write what are called smart contracts. The term smart contract was actually coined back in 1998 by an American computer scientist named Nick Szabo, who invented the digital currency called Bitgold 10 years before Bitcoin was created. Szabo's idea was to basically use computer code to execute terms of sophisticated contracts in the buying and selling of securities like options and futures. So, smart contracts are just lines of code that dictate the terms of a contract and control the execution of the contract. And with the nature of Ethereum's hardware layer and its blockchain-based software, this creates the perfect trustworthy digital environment for building and executing smart contracts. Smart contracts have the unique ability to authorize transactions and carry out terms of contracts within a trusted environment, which eliminates the need for a central authority like a government, bank, or legal system. So, smart contracts make transactions trackable, transparent, and permanent. Awesome. So we have the hardware layer and the software layer of Ethereum, which combined basically creates a global, decentralized supercomputer known as the Ethereum Virtual Machine, or EVM for short. In computing, virtual machines, or VMs, are simulations of computer networks that can be used for many different cases. In the case of the Ethereum Virtual Machine, or EVM, a very basic and general idea of its role in the ecosystem is to improve the flexibility of the software and ensure separation of each software host and each software application. And software applications bring us to the final layer of Ethereum, the application layer. The application layer is where developers can build and launch third-party decentralized applications, or dApps for short. The applications are decentralized because they operate on Ethereum's decentralized blockchain-based platform. Popular examples of dApps that have been created are CryptoKitties, which is a game, and Augur, which is a prediction market platform. At the time of this podcast, a total of 2,772 dApps have been launched on the Ethereum network, of which around 1,500 are live. There are several different dApp categories, including games, exchanges, identity, health, property, and more. At the time of this podcast, the categories with the most transactions are games and exchanges, while the categories with the most active users are finance and exchanges. If you want to check out all of the current dApps out there, you can go to https://stateofthedapps.com and filter by the Ethereum platform. Cool. Now, another popular element of the Ethereum ecosystem and dApps brings us to the next chapter. Chapter 5. What are ERC-20 tokens? You've probably heard the term ERC-20 before. And before we talk about ERC-20, let's talk about what ERC means. ERC is simply an acronym that stands for Ethereum Request for Comments. And it is similar to BIP, which stands for Bitcoin Improvement Proposal. Since Ethereum and Bitcoin are blockchain-based technologies, there is no one person or entity that is in charge of deciding what new features to add, changes to make, or fixes to implement to the protocols. So ERC is a process that was created as a way for people to contribute information about Ethereum or introduce new features to the Ethereum network. ERCs, or Ethereum Requests for Comments, are basically how developers can propose improvements to the network. So the number 20 of ERC-20 represents the unique ID number of that particular proposal. Let's talk about what ERC-20 is all about. ERC-20 is a token standard, which is simply a list of rules that any tokens issued on the Ethereum blockchain must follow. So what are tokens? In the context of Ethereum, tokens are types of cryptocurrencies with different functions that represent an asset or are intended for a specific use that operate on the Ethereum blockchain. So the Ethereum ecosystem allows for the creation, deployment, and circulation of virtual currencies or tokens. And ERC-20 proposed the implementation of rules and regulations developers must follow when creating tokens to issue on the Ethereum network. These rules dictate how the tokens can be transferred, transaction approval methods, user access to the tokens, and the total supply or number of tokens available. So ERC-20 basically ensures compatibility of new tokens issued on the Ethereum network. And tokens that currently run on the Ethereum blockchain are referred to as ERC-20 tokens. At the time of this podcast, over 242,000 different tokens have been issued on the Ethereum network. Some of the more popular ERC-20 tokens include Tether, Chainlink, and BAT. And each token has a different function or utility. For example, Tether is a token that is tethered to the US dollar, in that it maintains the same value as the US dollar. This makes the token price stable, staying at $1 per tether, which is why tokens with this function are called stablecoins. Stablecoins were designed to bridge the gap between fiat currencies and cryptocurrencies by allowing people with the token to hold an amount of cryptocurrency with a stable value. For example, when you look at cryptocurrency exchanges, you can see how Bitcoin and Ethereum prices are constantly in flux. 1 minute Bitcoin can be worth $10,300, and the next it can be worth $9,500. With Tether, you can hold $10,000 worth of the token, and minute to minute and day to day, the value will remain unchanged, which gives the token a lot of utility. An example of another token with different utility is BAT. BAT stands for Basic Attention Token, and it was created to be used as the currency for a web browsing dApp called Brave. BAT was designed as a form of payment to be traded between users, advertisers, and publishers in exchange for users' attention to advertisements and content. Pretty neat stuff. Another popular utility of tokens has been to raise capital to finance cryptocurrency projects, which brings us to our next chapter. Chapter 6. What are ICOs? ICO stands for Initial Coin Offering, which operates similarly to an IPO, or Initial Public Offering. An initial public offering refers to when a privately held company decides to offer shares of their company to the public in the form of stock on the stock market. An initial coin offering is the cryptocurrency world's application of this process by issuing tokens that are similar to stocks that sometimes, depending on the utility of the token, have a function within the product or service. ICOs are used to raise capital through crowdfunding in order to build a product or service typically a startup company wants to bring to market. In fact, Ethereum raised $18 million of funds in only 42 days from conducting an ICO in 2014. At that time, Ether was worth about 30 cents per Ether. Now, at the time of this podcast, Ether is worth around $230. So, while ICOs can be a great way for companies looking to build and offer blockchain-based products and services to secure funding, investing in ICOs is extremely risky. Since there is no regulation of the ICO process, many investors risk losing any funds they allocate towards ICOs due to fraudulent projects, scams, legitimate projects being shut down for one reason or another, or legitimate projects failing. Many times an ICO raises so much capital that the team loses any incentive to go through with the project and instead decides to take the money and abandon the project altogether. For that reason, I do not highly recommend investing in ICOs until more regulations have been implemented that protect investors' interests. Awesome. Now that we are familiar with the ICO process, ERC-20 tokens, and how the Ethereum ecosystem works conceptually, let's take a look at what the future holds for this blockchain project. Chapter 7, Ethereum 2.0. Later this year in 2020, Ethereum will start to undergo a major network update that has been nicknamed Ethereum 2.0, ETH2, or Serenity. Ethereum 2.0 is the final iteration of the Ethereum network's evolution and is set to launch later this year in 2020, which is coincidentally a few months after the Bitcoin halving event if everything stays on schedule. This update will involve switching from miners processing transactions through proof-of-work protocols to validators processing transactions through what is called proof-of-stake. In addition, the update will feature sharding, a new virtual machine, and much, much more. One of the main goals of this update is to improve the Ethereum network's efficiency and ability to scale. Ethereum 2.0 will allow the platform to handle the growing demand for dApps in the DeFi movement at large. There are many phases to this massive upgrade, so if everything stays on schedule, it will be a few years until the upgrade is 100% implemented and complete. We will break down the phases of the Ethereum 2.0 upgrade and get into more of the conceptual and technical details in another podcast. In the meantime, there is a lot of room for growth in this project, as it's still in its infancy developmentally. Widespread and real-world use of Ethereum is quite feasible at this point in time. Which brings us to the fun bit of information I promised to share at the beginning of this podcast. The EEA, or the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance. So here is the fun bonus fact. What is the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance? The principles inherent to Ethereum's platform, due to its blockchain foundation, are not principles normally adopted by large corporations. These principles relate to the pillars of blockchain we discussed earlier, namely decentralization and transparency. And as you may have realized throughout this podcast, the Ethereum platform offers many solutions to issues a lot of businesses, other types of entities, and entire industries at large face on a daily basis. To reconcile the disconnect between old-school practices and these new principles blockchain technology brings to the table, the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance was born. The Enterprise Ethereum Alliance, or EEA, was created to facilitate the conversion of enterprise-grade software to Ethereum's decentralized blockchain-based platform. Members of this business alliance include a diverse mix of both large and small organizations. You can check out the EEA website at https://ententhalliance.org if you are interested in learning more about this alliance. Essentially, the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance will be a key driver in the mass adoption of the Ethereum network around the world. So, if Ethereum seems like something you would be interested in investing in, go to the description area and click on the link to the Coinbase exchange. You will receive $10 worth of free Bitcoin once you invest $100 or more in cryptocurrency. If you are new to cryptocurrency, check out my updated ultimate guide that walks you through the process of buying cryptocurrency like Ether from start to finish, step by step, on YouTube using the link in the description area. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my podcast. If you enjoyed the content and would like to listen to more crypto podcasts in the future, please make sure to subscribe to my podcast and consider subscribing to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/CryptoCasey. Also, make sure you head over to my Instagram account at instagram.com/CryptoCasey for 1-minute daily videos and to ask me anything every week on my Wednesday AMAs. So what do you guys think about Ethereum? Is it a project you would consider investing in? Do you think it has the potential to overtake Bitcoin in market cap in the near or distant future? What other questions do you have about Ethereum I can answer for you? Lots of interesting things to think about. Be safe out there.